Job chapter number 38. And we're going to go back here tonight, and I'm going to try my dead level best to get all the way down through chapter 38, 39, and 40. And I can promise you we're not going to get down through chapter 41. But we'll get down to this other, the other. If you notice chapter 41, the very last two verses, chapter 41 is a description of Satan, the Leviathan. And you notice in verse 32, Job 41, 32, he maketh a path to shine after him. One would think the deep to be hoary. Upon earth there is not his like who is made without fear. Behold, he beholdeth all things, high things. He is king over all the children of pride. We just sang that song, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. And that first verse ends with a statement about Satan that says, on earth is not his equal. And Luther was quoting that passage right there when he said that. On earth is not his like. And a lot of times, I've always said to you, you never just sing the first verse of that song. Because when you do, you sing the first verse. You know, sometime in our singing, hymn sing on Sunday night, we'll sing just a verse of a song. That one, you notice how Alex always sang the second verse. It ends praising the Lord. you never just sing that first verse because it ends saying, you know, on earth there's nobody like him. And if the Lord Jesus Christ wasn't on our side, the battle we have to fight would be losing. And that's what Job 41, in essence, says. Luther understood that passage. But before we get there, you got to go back to Job 38. Now, we're talking about creation. And I was trying to show you last time how that in the first part of Job 38, what in essence what God says to Job is, I've already got, think about what you know, Job. When I created things back in Genesis 1 in those 6 days, I already have everything prepared to destroy the satanic policy of evil. I pre-arranged the battlefield. And I did it in those 6 days. All the plans, procedures, the necessary things that I'm going to use to destroy Satan in the last day over there, when I created the universe, the heavens and the earth, in Genesis chapter 1, those 6 days, I created it with that battle in view. And so everything's ready. And Job needs to remember that. Because Job is under satanic captivity. And God is in essence saying to Job, I already got it all figured out how I'm going to wipe this guy out. The reason you're suffering and the reason I haven't delivered you, it just isn't time to do it yet. But look around you, what you know about creation, I've already got it figured out. I had it figured out from day one of the 6 day recreation of the universe out here. So don't worry, Job. I'm going to be a faithful creator. I'm going to take care of it. Now, we've been looking at it from the point of view of just how God already, you know, he makes a light shine out of darkness. The one that did that, the one that spoke all these things. It's just fascinating to me how that in Genesis 1, he already had in view the destruction at the end. And that's what I was trying to say to you this morning about the fact that, excuse me, God, when he created man, when he created the universe and he created the earth the way it is now, he created it with a view of restoring the authority of the Lord Jesus Christ. And not just in the earth, but in the heavens too, we now know. Now, he's going to change the topic just a little bit in verse 24 here. He says, verse 24, by what way is the light parted, which scattereth the east wind upon the earth? Who hath divided a water course for the overflowing of waters, or a way for the lightning of thunder, to cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness wherein there is no man, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground, and to cause the bud of the tender herb to spring forth? Hath the rain a father? Who hath begotten the drops of dew? Out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heaven? Who hath gendered it? The waters are hid with a stone, and the face of the deep frozen. He's asking Job, okay, Job, I got everything ready. Now let me ask you another question. Who controls this stuff out here? Now, Job knew who controlled it. Who controls it? God. Now, I'm tempted to get ahead of myself just a little bit. He understands that God controls it. When you read down through that, and the emphasis there is on that who does this? Well, Job knows God's doing it. But now God's going to say, okay, you know I control all that, but now watch verse 31. Canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pelagius or loose the bands of Orion? In other words, Job, you know that I control the universe, right? I control the dew, the rain, the lightning, everything. In other words, all the atmosphere, the weather, the atmospheric conditions, the way the world, the universe works out there. I control all that. You understand that? You know who does that. I do. I'm the father of all that. Now, can you control, can thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades? Or loose the bands of Orion? Canst thou bring forth Maseroth in his season? Or canst thou guide Arcturus with his sons? Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Canst thou set the dominion thereof in the earth? Or what's the answer to all those things? No. Job knows that God can control it, but does Job know how to control that? No. But now hold your hand here and come back with me to Genesis chapter 1. Because if you don't remember this passage, you're going to miss what God's getting at with Job. Genesis 1 verse 28. Let me check a verse just a second. Genesis 1, verse 28. Verse 26, let's start in verse 26. Genesis 1, 26. God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it. And have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Now, think about that just for a minute. What's man to do? He's to have dominion. He's to subdue the earth, refill it, repopulate it, but he's to have dominion. He's to subdue it. And he's to have dominion over all the earth, everything in the earth. Job 38, verse 33. Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Canst thou set the dominion thereof in the earth? You see, the implication there is what God is saying to Job is, can you control how the heavens affect the earth? Job has to say no. But should he have been able to? Well, look at Genesis 1. What's he supposed to do in Genesis 1? Have dominion over the things that are on the earth. You see, there's a problem God's pointing out to Job. Job, you know I control all this stuff in the universe. Do you control any of it? Read on down in verse 34, Job 38, 34. Canst thou lift up thy voice to the clouds, that abundance of water may cover thee? Can you control the atmosphere and the weather and make it rain when you tell it to? No. Should he have been able to? Well, folks, if you have dominion over the earth, what does that imply? That implies he should have been able to. But he can't. Why can't he? Something's wrong. You follow what I'm saying? I know that sometimes you think, he's supposed to do all that. Job should have been able to do all the things God's talking to him about now. But he can't do any of them. Why? There's something wrong. What's wrong? Sin. That's what's wrong. Verse 35, canst thou send lightning that they may go and say unto thee, here we are? Can you reach out into the electrical currents of the you know, there's all this stuff going on today about powers, energy sources. And we use all the carbon, you know, the fossil fuels and all that, they call it the petrol fuel systems. There is energy in this planet. There's energy. They can take pictures of your body and show the energy fields that come out of your body. Life has to do with energy. I saw some pictures the other day. I was down in Florida of a guy. He had some coins, a dime and a quarter. And they'd taken some pictures of those things with the real fast film, and they had pictures of the energy fields emitting out from that. Some of you have been down with us down to Ridge Farm, and you know every time we go down to Ridge Farm in the fall for the conference down there, Brother Morris gets out those rods, those steel welding rods, and bends them over and lets people walk along with them in their hand. And when you walk over a drain tile on the ground, they turn like this. And it's sort of like, ooh, what, you know, and all you got to do is walk over them. And when you walk over them, they turn in your hand. Or sometimes they'll turn that way, but they turn. And if you mark the spot where they turn and turn back and walk this way, then they'll turn again, mark that spot. The drain tile will be halfway between those two places you mark, and it'll be the depth of that half distance. And you say, well, how do they do that? Ooh. Dave Hunt says, that's demonic. No, that's not demonic. You know what that is? That somebody discovered something that Adam should have known. You with me? That's not demonic kind of stuff. There's no demons involved in that. That's simply the force fields in the earth. That's the way creation is. And there are all of these intricate things that the creation has going out there that have nothing to do with demons. They have nothing to do with hokey, pokey, whoo kind of stuff going to get you. It just has to do with sitting down and figuring out how the world and how the universe, and especially the earth, is designed to operate. Now, having said that, when I read down through this part of Job, I'm fascinated. The Bible is the only scientific, absolutely accurate scientific textbook you'll ever get your hands on. And when you read down through a passage like this, and God begins to ask Job, can you do this? No. Can you do that? No. Can you do this? No. Why not? You ought to be able to. That's what I put you down there to do. But he asked him some wild things. Look at the things. And some of this stuff, if I was 20 years old, and getting out of college. In fact, I thought about this when I was young and in college, but I wanted to preach. If I was a young person and I didn't want to preach the gospel and I didn't want to spend my life doing that, I'd probably, knowing my wife keeps telling me, says, you should have lived 100 lives. Everything you see, you'd like to do. I was watching a guy drive a truck the other day. I said, man, I'd like to have been a truck driver. Yeah, it's just fascinating. Take that big old 18-wheeler and put it down in that needle. Just somebody in a big old truck, just with a velvet touch of gentleness, back that trailer right down an alley. And I said, we were down on Madison Avenue, down at Wabash, down there. And he backed in an alley behind Carson Perry Scott there, and an alley hardly big enough. Out of each window, you could have reached the. And he took that big truck off that street and just backed it right in. I thought, man. What skill that is. You know, and you all you think about truck drivers is some lug running out there on the street out there, you know, and getting in front of you and making you mad. But some of these guys have the skill and the precision to drive those things. I think, wow. Well, if you wanted something to do that would be fascinating, I'd take Job 38 and take some of these things that he says man ought to have been able to do. There'd be some tremendous scientific discovery. You know what's going to happen for energy? He said, can you say to the lightning, go there? And the lightning comes to you and says, here I am, I'll serve you. What do you want me to do? There are clean energy sources available in nature that have nothing to do with petrochemicals and nothing to do with nuclear power. Those things are all destructive. You're tearing down. But there are things, you go over there and you get in that light plug over there and you stick your finger in that light socket and you know there's not one person that ever works with electricity can explain to you what electricity is. I sat in a pickup truck of a man who was one of the top executives of a power company in Washington State. Man's got a doctorate level degree in electrical engineering. And I said, "Brother Irwin, explain to me what electricity is." And he talked for 10 minutes and I said, "Huh?" And he says, "Well, electricity is electricity." I said, "You can't define a word by the use of the word." That's a first grade rule about definition. What is sin? Well, sin is sin. Well, no, you can't define a word by using the word. You have to tell me what it... And he says, "Well, we just actually don't know. We just know how it works." Well, it's more important to know how it works and what it is, but they don't really understand it. But they figured out how some of that stuff works. Was it Edison that had the key at the end of the kite string and the lightning hit the kite? Who? Franklin. Okay, I knew it wasn't Edison. My mind wouldn't tell me what. But the point is, you know what he was doing? He's doing Job 38 kind of experiments. You see, in creation, God has all of these things already there, so that in the millennium, when man is who man ought to be and does what man ought to do, like Psalm 8 said he will, then all the answers to all these problems are just going to come out of the woodwork. So when you see kind of things, you think, "Wow, that's kind of strange things going on." You know what happens? There are a lot of people who've discovered some of those things. I was reading a thing on the internet the other day, and now you can read all kind of hokey stuff on the internet, so I don't believe everything I read on the internet. In fact, I don't believe a lot. If it's not in the Drudge Report, I hardly ever believe it. Well, see, I can see how many of you know what the Drudge Report is when I say that. But the guy was talking about a machine that he'd invented that produces perpetual motion. You get it started, and then it always has perpetual motion going in it. And thus, he said that this is the answer for the combustion engine. All you need to do is have the combustion engine to get it started, then you turn it off, and then it's perpetual motion. And people say, sure. You know what? This passage says that's a good thing to look into. Now, whether that man's got the right idea or not, I don't know. But this passage says there's an answer to energy problems in that kind of a thing. Look back at verse number 31. "Canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pelagius, or cast loose the bands of Orion, or canst thou bring forth Maseroth in his season?" Maseroth is the zodiac. The signs of the heaven. Orion is the biggest constellation in the heaven. And Pleiades are seven specific stars in Orion. And most of the time when people read that, they get involved in the doctrine of the position of the stars, and there's a bunch of stuff in that. But that's really not what this passage is about. When it says, "Cast thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades," Pleiades appears in the heavens in the springtime. And it produces, notice the sweet what? Influences. The stars up there produce influence on the earth. Can you break the bands of Orion? The stars influence the earth. Now, all through the centuries you've had astrology. And they say, "What sign are you? What sign are you? You know, you're what?" Well, that means, and you go look at your horrible scope and it tells you all, you know, it's all that stuff. That's just a bunch of hooey. But it's all backwards, see? Don't you see? They're telling you the stars and what sign you are and when this one is lined to that, you know, it's going to influence this and, well, maybe your day is going to be this way. It's sort of like Chinese, you know, you go to the Chinese restaurant and get the little fortune cookie at the end of the thing. They're just so generic. They all fit to some extent or another. And by the time, you know, you live 3 days, every one of them would fit in your life one little time along in those 3 days. So they never miss. But all of that is the perverted corruption of what's really in that passage. When he talks about, do you know the ordinances of heaven? You know, last week we looked over there in chapter 28 about the pillars of heaven. And there are rules, there are all these things that God has created out here in the heavens. Rules by, laws by which they operate. They all have influence on the earth. Who did God create in the earth to take those influences and have dominion and subdue those influences and use those influences for good? Man. You see, Adam was commissioned with the responsibility of learning all about all those things. Have you ever read a definition of gravity? Why don't you fall off the earth? I mean, the earth is spinning kind of fast. You do know that, don't you? 24,000 miles around the earth, the circumference of the earth, and in 24 hours you're going to go 24,000 miles and come right back here. You want 1,000 miles an hour. Well, I don't know about you, but you get in an airplane, fly 1,000 miles an hour and sit out on the wing, you'd fall off. In fact, you'd get blown off. Why don't you fall off the earth? They say centripetal force causes gravity. Are you sure? I used to paint. And I'd go roll up, you know, go paint, use a roller, roll a wall, paint a wall. You know how you clean a roller, paint roller after you get through with it? Now, if you're a professional painter, you buy a roller. You don't buy these 79-cent things at Walgreens or at Walmart. You buy one that costs a lot of money, and you're going to use it over and over. So you clean it, and you take that thing and you put water on it. You squirt it with water, and they've got a roller cleaner. And you know what it does? It spins. You pump it like this, and it spins. Now, this is back 25 years ago, so I mean, I don't know what they do now. But you spin it like this. And it spins that roller. And you put it down in a bucket, and you put water on it, and it spins, and it, you know what it does when it spins? It shoots that water out. You ever seen a dog come out of a pond? What does he do? Shakes all over. Does the water cling to him or fall off? It goes everywhere. So when the earth is spinning, why don't you fall off of it? People say, gravity, define it for me. You know they can't do it. I've read books this thick trying to define gravity and never found a definition for it anywhere. They can't even explain it. It don't make any sense. Well, I mean, when you pay $87,000 for an education to explain it, it makes sense to you. But when you're just like me, just trying to, you know, buy a book to make it make sense of just a common old Joe like me, it doesn't make any sense. You know why? They got no idea what it is. That's what he's saying. You guys, they know how to work with it. And they know how to operate around it and use it. But if that apple hadn't fell on Newton's head, we probably wouldn't know what was going on yet. So what happens? People sit, they think, they define it. Job, God said to Job, you know, Job, if you were really the man I created you to be, gird up your loins like a man, think like a man's supposed to think. You can handle this stuff. I control it, and I gave the responsibility to control it into your hands. You to go out and subdue these things, control them. Canst thou, and I love the way he says this, canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pelagius? Pelagius appears in the springtime in the sky over Palestine. Can you bind the sweet influences of Pelagius? Can you reach up and grab the constellations and the way the universe is going and make spring last and don't let it leave? Can you take the sweet influences that bring springtime and make them last, Job? Or can you loose the bands of Orion? Orion appears in September and October, and it lasts until February. That's wintertime. Can you go over here and break the chains of winter and get rid of winter? Now, you guys do it. In the fall, in the wintertime, you move to Florida and Arizona. And in the summertime, you move to Wisconsin and Canada. But you don't do one thing. For here, you know why? Because you can't, can you? You know what? There's a problem. Man can't do what God created him to do. But I just want you to see what God created man to do. You were created to take this universe apart and put it back together in an understanding way. Now, you know what happens. I take something apart. I put it back together. And I don't know. I know why the thing costs so much. They got too many parts in it. I got some left over. You had that experience recently, didn't you? Yeah, well, you know. I never will forget the first time I ever took a lawnmower engine apart. I was going to fix that thing. Took it all apart. Well, I put it all back together, and I had three pieces too many. But it ran. So I'm thinking, okay, one of those pieces was a little piece of square metal, about this long, and I looked everywhere for where that thing would go. I could not figure out where it went. So I said, well, okay, must not need it. Threw it in the garbage. The lawnmower ran just fine and cut grass, and then one day it started going, and it quit. And as a guy in the church, there was a repair guy, and I got him over and looked at it. He's opened it up and taking it apart. And he says, how long you had this thing? I said, oh, that's an old lawnmower. He said, anybody ever had it apart before? I said, yeah, I took it apart one time and did so-and-so with it, put it back together. My idea was if you just took it apart and put it back together, it's going to be better. I didn't change anything in it. I just took it apart and put it back together. Just see what was there. Took out those parts you didn't need. You know, parts are parts. Threw them away. And he laughed. He says, well, what about this part that goes right here on this wheel, flywheel, PTO shaft out of it? I said, oh, you know, that's where that thing went. There was a little thing. And you know what it was? It was a weight and a balance that was in there designed to keep that thing, that shaft, spinning in a balanced way. When I took it out, the shaft was off balance. And what did it do? Well, it wallowed out the bushing, and pretty soon the whole thing was well, we got a new lawnmower. And Alan got a big laugh at me. Well, see, there are all kinds of things you don't understand sometimes. And that's what he's asking, Job. Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Canst thou set the dominion thereof in the earth? You ought to be able to, Job. Can't you do that? No. Why? There's a problem. The universe is in rebellion. It says, I won't yield up to a usurper my treasures. And some of the... Look at the next verse. Verse 36. Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? Or who hath given understanding to the heart? Who did that? God. Look down at chapter 39, verse 17. Because God hath deprived her of wisdom, neither hath he imparted to her understanding. Talking about the ostrich. God's... Job... Who is it that was going to give wisdom and just put into your nature instinctively to understand wisdom and knowledge? You see, it's God that puts it. Job, Adam had one of the things he lost in the fall. God had inculcated into him, in his inward parts, wisdom and understanding. About what? What's he talking about here? He's talking about having dominion in the earth. I know you never thought about yourself being so bright. That's because you aren't. But you were intended to be. You've got the capacity. I was over there in South Africa last year, And there's a fellow in Desert Church there, Mark. He's a medical doctor. He works in the hospital in Cape Town where Christian Bernard did the very first heart transplant. Do you remember that? 25 years ago, whatever it is. And he works there in that hospital. His wife is also works there in that hospital. And I was talking to him about some of it. Mark's a young man, and he wasn't working then. But can you imagine the first time anybody ever thought about cutting somebody's heart out and sticking a new one in? How do you do that? How do you even come up with the idea of doing that? I got a good friend, a dear brother. He's with the Lord now, Warren Street. Brother Warren had a heart problem, had a bad valve in his heart. They cut him open. They put a pig valve in his heart. Now, whoever would have thought about that? Doesn't that encourage you to know that the closest genetically they can find any animal in creation to you is a pig? Man, that's a real encouragement. I see Warren every now and then. I get up and look at him real close, and he said, "No, it's not flat yet." But I do go, oink, oink. But all these things that people do, I'm fascinated all the time by what people, by inventions. You know, you just think about those lights there. And air conditioning. I like that, the heating. The ideas of doing things. Build a better mousetrap. Now, see, we're doing it, most people do it now, to do what? Build a better mousetrap, and the world will be the path to your door, and do what? Spend money. But Adam was designed. And if we can figure out what we figure out today, with a rebellious heart, fighting against a creation that doesn't want to yield up its treasures, a creation fighting where God has not put the wisdom in your inward parts and has not given the wisdom, the understanding to your heart, where you don't have it in you because you've rejected it. You see, in Romans 1, when he talks about God gave him up to a reprobate mind because he did not like to retain that which is the knowledge of God. They lost a lot more than just spiritual connection with God and eternal life in heaven and all that. Part of what man lost was the capacity to be who God had created him to be in the earth, which was to have dominion over all these things. And dominion over it doesn't just mean, hey, move over here, sit over there, shut up, move here, come here, heal. Doesn't mean just that. And it doesn't mean just heal, get well. It's talking about, you see, those are things designed to try to curb rebellion and sin. But Adam in an unfallen creation, with all the potential to innately understand everything that was there, could use it for God's work, glory. And could have gone out, and I think about it, he's to have dominion over the beasts of the field, all things that creep in the earth. You know what's out there in that earth? Those angels, those gods, those fallen gods. And when Satan says to Eve, God knows you can be like one of those gods out there. And she had seen those gods fly in and land and do things, marvelous things, and fly off and come back. And she said, boy, that'd be great to be able to do that. You know what? Adam could have figured out how to do it. That's the point. You need a little energy? He could say, lightning, come on over here. I need a little energy. I'll plug you in over here and get your energy source. He could have reached out into creation and got the need. And I think, wow, man. Now, maybe that doesn't fascinate you, but it does me. And it tells me that if I was a young man going into life wanting to be a scientist, I wouldn't sit around and say, well, there is a God. No, there isn't a God. I've never seen God. It must not be. I'd wake up. You got to be blind in one eye, can't see out of the other, not thinking very often with your brain anyway to think there's not a God. Look around at creation. Where'd it all come from? How come it's so complex and complicated and designed? You ever just take a typewriter and just start beating on it and write a doctoral thesis? No. I used to have this typing course years ago. Guaranteed you to teach you to type words in the first lesson. Wow. Buy that thing right away. You type the word A and an. A-N. Well, it's a word, isn't it? They didn't say complicated words. So, I mean, if you just beat on the typewriter like a monkey every now and then, you're going to get one word or two words out, but a whole thesis? No, you know it takes a designer. Somebody asked me years ago, said, what's going to happen when they create life in a test tube? I said, oh, that'll be wonderful. It'll scientifically prove that it requires a creator to create life. It doesn't happen unless you've got a creator. So then the question is, where did it come from the first time? So I wouldn't waste my time on that kind of stuff. And that's why I tell you guys about all this creation scientist stuff. I tell you all the time about science worshiping churchmen are as bad as the science worshiping pagans about diverting their attention. Now, I'm for you fighting them, and I'm for you going after the evolution and rebuking it and demonstrating it to be stupid and vile and corrupt and evil and just rootless materialism for what it is. But boy, there's a whole lot of other interesting things that you could do if you got into science. That'd be some of them. I'd do that. Verse 37, canst thou number the clouds in wisdom? Or canst thou stay the bottles of heaven? When the dust groweth into hardness and the clods cleave fast together? Can you control the climate? Can you control the energy source? I mean, all the things out there in creation that man could have controlled. Now, to me, when I read this, it isn't so much to me. You know, I look at I know the point. The point is, Job, can you do it? No. Why? There's a problem. You ought to be able to do it, Job. You think you're so smart and so big shot? You can't, can you? There's a problem out there that only I can take care of. That's what God's telling Job. But I'm just fascinated by the things he says. Points to Job and says, you can't do that, can you? You should have. You can't, can you? You should have been able to do that. Should have been able to do this. Well, wow, isn't it fascinating that he should have been able to? All these outlandish things, we think. Wilt thou hunt the prey for the lion? Or fill the appetite of the young lions? Wilt thou, when they crouch in their dens and abide in the covert to lie in wait, who provideth for the raven his food? When his young ones cry unto God, they wander for lack of wheat of meat. Well, Job, if you can't control the physical world out here, the heavens and the influences of the heavens on the earth, and you can't control the atmosphere in which you live, and you can't control the earth, can you control the animal kingdom? Can you keep the lion from? I mean, can you stop the lion from practicing the survival of the fittest? Can you keep the raven from going out and being what he is? What's the answer? No. That lion over there in Afghanistan, you know, that made all the headlines when the war was over there. They bumped the Taliban off out of there, and they had that old lion. Man, that was a mangy-looking old dude. And he only had one eye, and some things wrong with him because he, you know why he was that way? He'd killed a guy. And somebody got in there with him when he was in better health, before they'd starved him, and he had mauled a guy. And when he mauled a guy and killed him, like a good Muslim, you kill my brother, I kill you. The brother of the guy that he killed went to get revenge on the lion. and he threw a hand grenade or something in there and blew up, and it took the lion's eye out and did a bunch of other damage to him and left the poor animal in a mess like he was in when he finally died. And, you know, we're going to get vengeance on that lion. He messed up my brother, like he did it on purpose or something. You got to be kind of spaced out, you know, when you go play, you're going to go, come here, kitty, 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 and he weighs 800 pounds. You know, you're not all together wrapped all up real tight when you do that. But I was watching him over there, and I kept wondering, how did that poor lion kill anybody? Every time I saw him, somebody was walking with him, carrying him along. And then I read the story about how he was, you know, he's old and he's crippled and he couldn't see in one eye, and the guy walked along with him always stayed on the side of him where he didn't have the eye, so he couldn't, you know, he couldn't see him. That's smart. But you know, you can make friends with a lion all you want to, or you're not really going to change his nature. You know how they get them to act in the circus like they do? They keep them well fed. Sure. Why? So they don't feed on you. But you're not changing his nature. That's what he's... You can't control the animal kingdom either, Joe. What good are you anyway? Everything God puts you to do, you can't do. 39 verse 1. Knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Or canst thou mark when the hen do calve? Canst thou number the month? I mean, do you know anything about the reproduction cycle of these things? Can you control when they're going to have their kids? Can you control their gestation period? No. Verse 5. Who has set out the wild ass? Who hath sent out the wild ass free? Or who hath loosed the bands of the wild ass? Can you get a wild jackass out here to behave? No. Verse 9. Will the unicorn be willing to serve thee, or abide by thy crib? Canst thou bind the unicorn with his band in a furrow, or will he harrow the valley after thee? Well, he should have been able to, but he can't. Will thou trust him because his strength is great? Wilt thou believe him that he will bring home thy seed and gather it into the barn? You just going to take that old guy out there and just say, just go on out there and plow the field for me, will you? No, what are you going to do? You're going to bind him. You're going to put reins in his mouth. You're going to put harnesses on him. And when he wants to get over there and get in the grain and start eating the grain, what are you going to do? You're going to pull him out. You don't trust him at all. You can't give him an assignment, him go do it. But if you had him subdued and you had dominion over him, you could. Job, you can't even make the peacock, verse 13, or the ostrich. When we were in South Africa, we went to that ostrich farm and see this ostrich, and the guy says, you see his eyeball big? Or he said his brain's not that big. Got a little bitty pea brain, and said he's dumb. Said he can, half a mile across the field over there, he said he can see a squirrel and a rabbit. Sharp eyesight. But he said he just can't figure out what to do. Got no brains. And that's what, in essence, this passage says about him. Verse 19, hast thou given the horse strength? No. Verse 20, canst thou make him afraid of as a grasshopper? No. There are 10 animals listed down through here. But if you start, I noticed not long ago, I was going through this passage, and I noticed how in the last part of verse 38, chapter 38, he lists two animals, the lion and the raven. Then he lists the goat, the wild goat, the hen, verse 1, 39:1. Then there's the wild ass in verse 5, the unicorn in 9, the peacock in 13, and the ostrich in 13, and then the horse in 19, and the grasshopper in 20, that's 10. Then in verse 26 is 11, the hawk. Then in verse 27 is the eagle, and that's 12. There are 12 animals listed down through there in that chapter. Two of them in chapter 38, 10 of them in chapter 39. Now the reason that's interesting is when you come to chapter 40. What he said about the animals is, you can't control the animal kingdom. You can't control the universe. You can't do anything I created you to do, Job. You're a waste of good space. What's wrong? There's a rebellion out there. And in order for man to ever be what God created man to do, that rebel and that satanic policy of evil that has made this the present evil world, and evil in the Bible is a special word. It's not just like sin. Evil is a word that describes the program and the policy and the operating procedure of the satanic program. And until that is dealt with, man can never be what God created him to be. So in chapter 40, God's going to say, Job, you can't do what you ought to do. Why? There's a problem. Let me ask you, can you fix the problem? Here's what it's going to take to fix the problem. And God begins to describe to Job two characters that have to be dealt with in order to get rid of the evil in the universe and in the world. 40, verse 1. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that proveth God, let him answer it. Job, you think you know more than I know? Speak up. Well, at this point, Job's already got the idea. He says, behold, I'm vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth.
Ain't said nothing.
You know? Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. I done flapped my gums too much, Lord. You just speak on. See, Job's figured it out. The Lord's got this thing fixed. Job, there's a problem Job can't handle. And he says, now, Job, you think you're smarter than me and you can handle this problem? Job says, Lord, I've talked enough. You keep talking. Then answered the Lord, and that's a good way to be, you know. Good attitude to have. The Lord answered and said, Then answered the Lord unto Job out of the whirlwind and said, gird up now thy loins, gird up thy loins now like a man. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. Now, that expression, gird up thy loins now like a man, numbers of times that passage, that expression is used when God is describing somebody fixing to go to battle. God's fixing to describe here with Job, for Job, the battle, the fight, the contention that's going to be necessary to fix the problem that's in the world and in the universe. Wilt thou also disannul my judgment? Wilt thou condemn me that thou mayest be righteous? Notice that word also. That's what the adversary's done. He's tried to disannul God's judgment. He's tried to condemn God and make himself right. He's rejected God's plan for his life. He said, I know better than God. I got a better idea. Hast thou an arm like God? Or canst thou thunder with a voice like him? Deck thyself now with majesty and excellence. Array thyself with glory and honor. Now, he's talking to a guy sitting on an ash heap that's shaved his head, thrown ashes all over himself, been there 7 days and hadn't had a bath. He's in kind of a messy condition. He says, get up, Job, and clothe you, deck yourself with glory and honor and beauty, with majesty and excellence. Those are terms that describe the way God has clothed himself in creation. Can you deck yourself out like that, Job? By the way, every one of those things is a description of Jesus Christ at the second advent. And what he's describing to Job here is what it's going to take to get rid of the satanic policy of evil, which is the day of wrath and judgment. That's why it says in verse 11, cast abroad the rage of thy wrath, and behold everyone that is proud, and abase him, Look on everyone that is proud and bring him low and tread down the wicked in their place. Hide them in the dust together and bind their faces in secret. Then will I also confess unto thee that thine own right hand can save thee. Come on, Job, show me what you got. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take the second advent of Jesus Christ to destroy the enemy. Behold now, Behemoth, which I made with thee. He that grasses an ox, lo now, his strength is in his loins and his force is in the navel of his belly. He moveth his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his stones are wrapped together. His bones are as the strong pieces of brass. His bones are like bars of iron. He is chief of the ways of God. He that made him, God, can make his, God's sword, to approach unto him. But there ain't anybody else can touch that rascal. Now, Behemoth, you know, they say he's the elephant. Schofield note says the elephant, as some think. They get over to chapter 41, Leviathan, and they say the crocodile or the whale. The word Behemoth is a Hebrew word. It's not translated. And it's the plural form of the word beast. In other words, it's beast, plural. Now, the thing about this guy is, if you start back in the first where he starts listing the animals, there are 12 of them. You get to this guy, this is Mr. 13. Which ought to tell you something. 13 in the Bible is not a good number, bad number. Bad. It's a number of rebellion. Genesis 14, the first time it shows up. You go to Revelation chapter 13, and you see this guy described. And you know how he's described in Revelation 13? Hold your hand here and come over there and let me just read it to you. Revelation 13, verse 1, I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, it having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. And the beast, which I saw, was like unto a leopard, one, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, that's two, and his mouth is the mouth of a lion, that's three. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. That beast, the Antichrist, is really a composite of three beasts. The lion, the bear, and the leopard. Amazingly enough, you'll find those same three beasts in Daniel chapter 7 describing again the same character. And you say, well, what is that? You'll find him again in Hosea chapter 13, the book of Amos, and so forth. And you say, what is that? That's a description of how God looks at the Antichrist. You know who the Behemoth is back here? He's the Antichrist. His number is 13. Isn't that interesting? You ought to study the 13s in the Bible sometime. You'll find it fascinating. But there's an enemy that has to be dealt with, Job. And that enemy isn't going to be dealt with until Jesus Christ comes back and destroys the Antichrist. When is that? The second coming. So Job, the problem you're looking at isn't going to be resolved until the second coming. I've been planning on resolving it since the first 6 days of creation back over there. I set it all up to do it. And I'll get to it in my own time. And until I get to do it in my time, you're going to have some suffering. And you know, if you're suffering now, it's because the time of getting that thing resolved hadn't come yet. Just hide and watch. But you can trust me, I'm a faithful creator. I've already got it set up, and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do for you what you can't do for yourself. Chapter 41. Canst thou draw out Leviathan with a hook, or canst thou, or his tongue with a cord that thou lettest down? Hold your hand there and come with me to Isaiah chapter 27, just so there isn't any misunderstanding about who Leviathan is. Isaiah 27, verse number 1. In that day the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. Now, who in the world is that? Well, you know who that is. Revelation chapter number 12. That's Satan. The behemoth and Satan, the Antichrist, and the one that gives him the power to do what he does, have to be dealt with. And so when Jesus Christ comes back, what does he do? He takes the Antichrist, the beast, and the false prophet, and puts them in the lake of fire. And what does he do with Satan? He binds him in the bottomless pit for 1,000 years, and then throws him in the lake of fire. But you see, that's just what we read about back there in Job chapter 38. Look back there. Verse number 16. Hast thou entered into the spring of the seas, or hast thou walked in the search of the depth? Have the gates of death been opened unto thee, or hast thou seen the doors of the shadow of death? Hast thou prepared the breadth of the earth, and declare thou that thou knowest it all? Where is the way where light dwelleth? Or, and as for darkness, where is the place thereof, that thou shouldest take darkness, to the bound thereof, that thou shouldest know the path to the house thereof? God says, Job, do you know where the place is already prepared out here for me to put darkness and the power of darkness and the dudes that run the power of darkness? I got a place in the universe already ready. The kindling's already stacked up. All I got to do is put them there and light the match. You know where it's at, Job? I do. I got it all prepared. I read an article yesterday in a magazine talking about hell. It just fascinates the dickens out of me how people get all balled up with these terms about hell and Hades and Gehenna and Tartarus and the lake of fire and all this stuff. And they're saying hell and the lake of fire is the same thing. Well, if hell and the lake of fire are the same things, how in the world is it that in Revelation chapter 20, death and hell are cast into the lake of fire? How are you going to cast something into itself? Well, you can't do that. If it's here to be cast in, it can't be the thing that it's cast into, because it's over here. You fix and throw it in. The problem is people get Greek-itis. And they think they know something that they don't really know, because they read books that told them about something, and all they really knew about it was in the books anyway. And if you're going to talk English, you have to talk English. And the word in English is hell. Go out here on the street corner and ask anybody. They don't say, oh, Hades, unless you're trying to be in polite company. I mean, when was the last time, except your grandma, you ever heard anybody say, oh, damn it to Hades? You didn't, did you? They said, damn it to what? Oh, why don't you go to heaven? No. Hell's the word. You know what the word is in English. Now, the word Hades and Sheol mean the underworld, the world of the departed dead. Well, that's what hell means. Who goes to hell? Dead people. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, saints could go to hell and lost people could go to hell, because hell was where the dead people went, down the heart in the center of the earth. Hell is the underworld. The world in the center of the earth. In fact, that's why that verse is talking about the thing about in the earth. There's the hollow earth doctrine. It's not physically hollow. Hell is located in the center of the earth. And prior to the cross, there were two compartments. There was Abraham's bosom, called paradise, and there was torment. That's why David would say in Psalm 16, in hell I lift up my eyes. Thou wouldst not leave my soul in hell. How come King David would say that he was going to die and go to hell? Did he go to the torment side or the paradise side? Well, you know where he went. He went to Abraham's bosom. He's a saved man. But it's in the heart of the earth. Now, after Christ goes back into heaven, where does paradise go? He tells the thief on the cross, today thou shalt be with me in paradise, and it goes down into the heart of the earth. So it's down the heart of the earth there. But after his resurrection and ascension back into heaven, Paul's caught up into paradise. Where'd he get caught up into? The third heaven. The paradise side had been moved from the earth to the third heaven. You say, but I thought Israel's hope was the earth. Well, Israel's in New Jerusalem. Hebrews chapter 2, chapter 12, verse 22 to 24 talks about they've come not to the Mount Zion and Jerusalem on the earth, but to New Jerusalem in heaven. And one of the things they've come to is to the church of the firstborn, the general assembly of the church of the firstborn, under the spirits of just men made perfect. You know where Adam is today, where Noah is today, where Abraham is today, where Job is today? They're in New Jerusalem. They're no longer in the heart of the earth. They're up there in New Jerusalem. Now, they're going to be resurrected back in the earth, but right now they're up there. The only people that are in hell today are lost people. So when I say a lost man dies and goes to hell, you know where he goes to? He dies and goes to hell. It's right off this heart of the earth. Before you can get out of, a lost man dies, before you got time to get in an asbestos suit, get anything ready for it, you just fall right off right down into hell. And you never quit falling. You just always falling like a tumbling dryer. Earth is rotating. And there's that spiritual place down there. There's a gate. It's over there in Palestine, right south of the Dead Sea, where the entrance goes. And you're just sucked into that thing like a vacuum cleaner. Just and thump, right down in there you go. I hope you don't ever have that happen to you. But it'll be just real as you sitting in that seat tonight if it does. If you're lost, you're just a heartbeat from that happening to you. My son down in Florida, his wife, Stacy's got a cat. Pretty cat. Great cat. Beautiful cat. But the cat's kind of messed up. He walks along, his back end gets ahead of its front end sometime. And you say, what's the matter with the cat? Well, one day the cat was sleeping in the drawer. And her brother went in, threw his clothes in the drawer, turned the drawer on, and they heard the cat bouncing around in the drawer, but they thought it was just his tennis shoes bouncing around. Well, it was that too. But Fred walked by the front of the drawer and saw the cat's face go by the little glass door. And he said, uh-oh, and let the cat out. Well, the cat hadn't been the same ever since. You wouldn't be either if you got tossed in the dryer. And I think about that. I said, that's what hell's going to be like. You're down in that thing tumbling around, darkness, strike a match right in front of your face, and you couldn't even see it. That's what Job 10 says. The land of darkness. That's why I said I got a place to put dark. I already got this place figured. Hell is like jail. Then they go to the great white throne judgment. And everybody in hell, the earth flees away and hell's just left there. And all the lost of the ages are right there. One of the compartments in hell is called a bottomless pit. One of the compartments in hell is called Tartarus. It's out in darkness. It's where the angels are kept. And one place is a torment where, see, hell was prepared for the devil and his angels. You die and go to hell, listen, little demons come up in front of you, shake their fists at you, and the only word they'll ever say to you is forever, 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 forever. That'll make hell hell if you weren't dancing on coals. Never get out. Never get out. Why in the world would anybody want to die and go to hell? Well, I got friends down there. You think they're going to think you're smart for coming? I mean, what gourd did you fall off of? But anyway. At the great white throne judgment, the damned of the ages, condemned by their own voice, by their own works, by their own deeds, are then cast into this place that he's already prepared down at the bottom of the universe. For the horse and his rider, the Antichrist, is going to be cast already there. See, he takes the beast and the false prophet and puts him down there and lights it, gets his bick going, and up it goes. And then he takes Satan and puts him down there. Then he puts the damned of the ages down there with the angels cast down there. And they're tormented for eternity. He said, I already got it all prepared. Take care of it. That's something. And he said, I can get Behemoth and I can take him over there. You better not get in the ring with him. You get in the ring with him, he'll clean your plow. But I can make my sword approach to him. You read down through Job 41 when it talks about the Leviathan. He says, if you could see the devil tonight, I used to have a friend down in Alabama. He was a real nut. A lot of my friends are nuts, but this guy was just a real nutcase. And he used to talk about, I wish the devil would, I'd like to get the devil. Devil, come in here tonight. I'd jump down that aisle. I'd go and tie a knot in his tail. That's not what Job 41 says. 41 verse 7 says, canst thou fill his skin with barbed iron, or his head with fish spears? Lay thy hand upon him. Remember the battle. Do no more. You touch him, buddy, get in fight with him. You're not going to do that again. Behold, the hope of him is in vain. Shall not one be cast down even at the sight of him? None is so fierce that dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand before me? If you could look into the spirit world tonight and see the demons and the devils, and you saw the devil himself, he said, you'd just fall flat on your face, passed out, cold as a mackerel. Scare you into passing out. He's that terrible. And God said, if you can't stand in front of him, what are you going to do when you face me? Because he's just a little pipsqueak compared to Almighty God. But the only one that can handle him is God himself. And what God's telling Job is, Job, you know what you need to do? You need to relax, buddy. I got this thing figured. And I've had it figured from the day one. Because when I started creating things back here, I already had a plan to take care of that rascal. So just relax and enjoy the ride. Trust me, and I'll take care of it. Now, that's what God told the first man that ever wrote a book in the Bible. The first book in the Bible ever written, the book of Job, tells you that. It's not until you come to the Apostle Paul, the man that wrote the last book in the Bible ever written, that you come to understand how it is that God could do that. What right he had to do it. And what that pre-creation plan was that caused him to create everything the way he did, knowing what he was going to do. Not just restore the earth, but the heavens themselves. The whole government of the whole universe. All the powers back under the headship of his son. So if it's true of Job, it ought to be true of us 100 times. Hey, you could just relax and enjoy the ride. You don't have to go clothe yourself in majesty. You don't have to exercise your power and your big old strong right arm. Forget it. Enjoy who God's made you in Christ. Enjoy His glory, His majesty, His power, His excellence, His mighty right arm, knowing that none of these things can separate you from the love of God that's in Christ Jesus. But it is fascinating what, you know, as you live in this world, all the things God tells Job he could have known and could have done if he hadn't have been, had this fight going on, and one day God will do it. Can you imagine all through the heavens and eternity future, all throughout the universe, you and I, people say, what are we going to be doing out there? And I said, we're going to run in the government. You know what you're going to be doing? You're going to be saying to the lightning, come over here, I need a little energy over here. These folks need a little energy. We need a little on this field. Whatever it is out there, I don't know how to describe what's out there. I hadn't been there. He uses terms that describe here. I understand that. But we're going to be reigning over creation, having dominion over creation in the heavenly places, in such a way as to demonstrate the exceeding riches of His kindness toward us through Jesus Christ. Demonstrating the wealth of His wisdom, how He's put wisdom and understanding in our hearts. And we're going to honor Him. What a day that's been. I've taught all this stuff for the last couple of weeks because I want you to know this stuff is real. That's the whole motivation behind it. I want you to understand that these things are real. Your hope in Christ is real. It's not just a theoretical, esoterical thing to tell you that, well, you can get through tomorrow if you just have a positive mental attitude. You're going to get through tomorrow if you don't have a positive mental attitude. See, that's the good thing. That's what God's grace says. You're going to endure. You can endure because you are going to endure. You might fall apart, but you're still going to endure. Hey, that's victory. That's victory. That doesn't depend on you. It just depends on Him. I don't know about you, but every now and then I have a day. I shouldn't say it that way. Kind of on a regular basis, I have a day that I look back at it and I say, you know, that was an absolute, I just absolutely blew this one. I have days that, you know, you get the joy, joy, you get the victory, victory. I get days that say, I want that mountain, Lord. And I get through the end of the day and I say, you know, I couldn't get the four-wheeler started. I'm just sitting down here in the valley. I didn't get anywhere today. Yeah. I got those. And you know, the good thing is, I still just relax. Because in Christ, I still got the victory. And you know what that does? That turns even the defeat into victory. Because even that didn't separate me. That's wonderful. And when you look at Job from that perspective, you say, whoa, look at this stuff. I said to Bonnie the other night, I said, for me personally, just my own personal, private, individual, personal edification, you don't have to be like this at all, I hope you're not. I think the book of Job is one of the most thrilling books in the Bible. When I want to just sit and read something to relax, often I read the book of Job. Because it's one of my favorite books. And what I'm talking to you is the mindset that I read it with that makes it that way. Father, thank you tonight. Oh, thank you for your love and your grace and for the victory that you've accomplished for yourself and given us a part of in the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.